This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Friday, February 7th, 2020. When CrossPolitik interviewed David French in Nashville a couple weeks ago, David recommended that I read Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post on fact-checking Trump, claiming that Trump has lied hundreds and hundreds of times. Now, I know what you're thinking. How can we get a hold of that David French interview? Well, if you become a Fight Laugh Feast Club member, you will get the entire thing, 2.5 hours of us with David French in a barbecue joint in Nashville, Tennessee. It was fantastic. It was a wonderful conversation. Had a great time. Okay, maybe that's not what you were thinking. Now I know what you're really thinking. Can anything good come from the Washington Post? I mean, this guy's writing for the Washington Post fact-checking Trump. Is that really legit? And it really is a reasonable question, but I decided to give him a chance. And Kessler served up an article this last week following up on the State of the Union address, claiming that the president made 31 false claims in that one speech. 31 false claims in that one speech. That's the headline in the Washington Post. So I thought, okay, show me the money. If Trump can be shown to be making false claims, I'm willing to consider it. So the article begins. President Trump's State of the Union speech once again was chock full of stretched facts and dubious figures. Many of these claims have been fact checked repeatedly, yet the president persists in using them, unquote. But what follows was really silly. Beginning with Trump's claim that our economy is the best it has ever been, Kessler complains that Trump has made this claim some 260 times, breathlessly, as though we ought to be shocked and dismayed. But using several different metrics, he notes that 1953 had a better unemployment rate, several years had a greater growth rate and gross domestic product. There were some enormous booms in the 1960s and from 1950 to 1951 that had much higher growth. Okay. Fine. But is this really a lie? Is it really a deceptive claim for Trump to say that our economy is the best it has ever been? Is it really a misleading claim? I mean, by these very stats, the ones that Glenn Kessler himself has cited, Trump's claim would be strictly true by simply saying we have one of the best economies ever. But the English language allows for exactly what Trump said. When someone says that they had the best summer ever, do we insist that this means strictly that they can't possibly have had a better one? No, we understand colloquial expressions to simply be an expression of superlative appreciation. It's great. It's fantastic. Well, next, Kessler moves to Trump's claim that he passed historic and record-setting tax cuts. Kessler has a system of Pinocchio ratings by which he attempts to describe just how blatant Trump's so-called lies are. And in this case, Kessler gives this claim that Trump has passed historic and record-setting tax cuts a 4 Pinocchio rating, which is Kessler's most egregious category, the category for whoppers. Blatantly false statements and claims with no wiggle room at all. So he has a range of 1 to 4 Pinocchios, and 4 Pinocchios is the worst. But then he goes on to prove his 4 Pinocchio rating of this claim by Trump by ranking tax cuts as a percentage of the national economy. And on that scale, Trump's tax cuts are only the 8th largest in the last century. But come on, even just using Kessler's own rating, 8th largest, I don't know. It is historic. It is record setting. It's the 8th largest. But even my golden retriever might wonder if there are other ways of ranking tax cuts. And I'm just going out on a limb here, but what about just total dollars in tax cuts? In this particular speech, Trump didn't claim that his tax cuts were the biggest ever. He merely described them as historic and record-setting. But even if he had described them as the biggest ever, couldn't that possibly be the case just in total dollars cut? Or what about total percentage points of tax rate cuts. And I'm sure some enterprising H&R Block dude listening to this could come up with still other metrics by which Trump might be entirely justified. Shall we go on? Next, Kessler complains that Trump said he's created 7 million jobs, when in fact, Kessler says there have only been 6.7 million jobs since February of his inauguration. Oh, brother. Come on. Come on. Really? 6.7 million and he says 7 million and you're going to call this a falsehood, a lie. Trump claims 7 million have come off food stamps during his administration. And Kessler protests that he believes it's only 6 million. Again, seriously? These are your false statements. Okay, and it just goes on like that. Trump cites stats and Kessler quibbles, complains, and cites some metric that Trump's number doesn't match. But this is the thing. In order to show something to be false, you have to demonstrate that there is no possible way for it to be true. Otherwise, logic and the judgment of charity require us to allow the possibility of its truthfulness. Now, I fully grant that statistics are incredibly malleable and they can be weaponized in every direction. And Trump and his team can cut and slice and dice the statistics in numerous ways in order to celebrate and maximize their accomplishments. I totally understand that. I totally get that. And there may be places where Trump could be doing that in a way that is truly obscuring the full truth. I'm open to that being demonstrated. But none of the 31 examples that Kessler provides conclusively demonstrates that at all, in my opinion. If you're listening, you can check out the link. It's on the app. It's at the website, crosspolitic.com. Read the article yourself, if you so dare. Tell me what you think. Do any of these actually conclusively demonstrate a falsehood, a lie? And so, to your question, can anything good come out of Washington Post? My answer is, well, probably not. The drama continues in Iowa as Judicial Watch announced Thursday that 8 Iowa counties have more voter registrations than their eligible voting age population. Oops. According to Judicial Watch's analysis of data released by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission in 2019 and the most recent U.S. Census Bureau's 5-year American Community Survey, 8 Iowa counties are on the list of 378 counties nationwide that have more voter registrations than citizens living there who are old enough to vote. That is, counties where registration rates exceed 100%. These 378 counties combined had about 2.5 million registrations over the 100% registered mark. In Iowa, there are at least 18,658 extra names on the voting rolls in the 8 counties at issue. Judicial Watch goes on to say, in addition to the 8 listed above, there are 8 counties listed. Polk County in particular, Iowa's largest county, has an unusually high registration rate of 95.9% of total eligible citizen voting age population. Dirty voting rolls can mean dirty elections, and Iowa needs to undertake a serious effort to address its voting rolls, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Judicial Watch is the national leader in enforcing the National Voters Registration Act, which requires states to take reasonable steps to clean their voting rolls. In 2018, the Supreme Court upheld a massive voter roll cleanup that resulted from a Judicial Watch settlement of a federal lawsuit with Ohio. California has settled a similar lawsuit with Judicial Watch this last year that began the process of removing up to 1.5 million inactive names from Los Angeles County voting rolls. Kentucky also began a cleanup of up to 250,000 names last year after it entered into a consent decree to end another Judicial Watch lawsuit. Meanwhile, the Associated Press announced Thursday that it was unable to declare a winner of the Iowa caucuses. And that is liberalese for saying that Sanders won, but the AP doesn't want the wrath of the Democratic establishment coming down on their heads. Finally, for today, I want to issue a book recommendation. This is truly newsworthy. The book is titled The Age of Entitlement. The author is Christopher Caldwell. It's been a while since I've read such an insightful, readable, intriguing sketch of modern culture. The book's thesis is that the Civil Rights Act of 1964, though laudable for its good intentions of righting racial prejudice and Jim Crow laws, the act effectively introduced a rival constitution into our country. The thesis that Caldwell develops begins by describing how the concept of freedom and equality was essentially changed constitutionally in the Civil Rights Act by essentially defining freedom and equality as that which is bestowed on individuals and classes of people by the government. Whereas the older constitutional vision of freedom was one of limited government, restraining the government, and equality before the law, the Civil Rights Act claimed that true freedom was only bestowed by the government. And if the government didn't recognize you, if the government didn't bestow that status upon you, you weren't truly free. But this in turn required a massive government bureaucracy and apparatus to enforce and carry out. Therefore, various forms of welfare, entitlement, enforcement, affirmative action, all kinds of agencies were all implied in the Civil Rights Act. In fact, by that logic, it was inevitable that the LGBT Gestapo would soon be claiming civil rights for themselves. I mean, how can they truly be free and equal until the government grants them their freedom? Anyway, this is just a phenomenal book. Honestly, at points, I'm shocked that it made it through the publishers and that Amazon hasn't banned it yet. So go get it now before it's canceled. Read it. Let me know what you think. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. You can find this show and all the others on the Fight Laugh Feast Network at crosspolitic.com or fightlaughfeast.com. Support Rowdy Christian Media and join our club at fightlaughfeast.com. Also, we have a brand new app, which you can find at your favorite app store. Just search Fight Laugh Feast. It'll come right up. We also hope to meet a bunch of you at our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st to the 3rd. Go to fightlaughfeast.com. Sign up for our conference email list. Registration will be opening up very soon. Have a great day.